listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
Well, we eulogize the great Stirling Moss on this episode. Also, get into fuel tank bladders. Some interesting info in that world. And an astounding revelation about Venice Beach, California in the mid-60s. And how place had a lot of range back then.
Yeah, it did. Then we touch a little bit on the Mustang Mach-E electric vehicles, what's going to happen in the next 2 years.
Yeah, all good stuff. First, Tommy John, for the next few weeks, or God forbid months, people are going to be trapped in their home. You want to be comfortable, and that means comfortable loungewear and underwear from Tommy John. For a limited time, all customers get 20% off site-wise, plus free shipping. Softest, most breathable proprietary fabrics perform like nothing you've ever worn before. They got the no-roll waistbands. And the no wedgie guarantee, by the way, no visible panty lines for the ladies. The stuff is top shelf. The fabrics are great, soft, and breathable. It dries really fast. So it's like if I hit my rowing machine and work up a little lather in my Tommy Johns, I just hang them out in my bathroom. I just air dry them. I put them on the next day. Save water, save electricity. You'll love Tommy John. Best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee. Right, Matt?
Yeah, hurry to TommyJohn.com/CarCast for 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/CarCast for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/CarCast.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on the trip. Get on Monday. Get on. Welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt Kroll. It's Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, over
Hello.
There. Hey, man.
How you doing? Nice robe.
Thank you. Jimmy Kimmel bought it for me some years ago. Get a good robe, everybody. Boy, I'll tell you, it's really paying dividends. Yeah, I got up. I got up a little late in the swimming pool. I actually, you know, there's a point when you make things like TV shows and movies and documentaries and stuff. There's a point where you get enough distance from the project where it's not really yours anymore. You could just watch it. You know, you can literally just watch an old movie or an old something you did. And especially when you're not in it, you know, you're kind of removed from it. And I ran into Mark. Well, I didn't run into Mark Garagos. I saw Mark Garagos yesterday and I saw him at the shop. He loved the Newman GT3 Porsche Petite Le Mans car. I don't even know. What is that thing? A GT3? What is that thing?
Yeah, it's a 2000. So, you know, just right. Some reference. It's fairly modern.
Yeah, Mark loved that car. Anyway, started talking, and he just looked at me, and he went, man, I don't know how I missed it the first time around, but the 24-hour war, man, what a story. And he said, you know, 10 minutes in, he was just drawn in, and it just kept going, you know? And I was like, yeah, it's a cool story. I don't think I've watched that movie, you know, in months or years or whatever it came out. Like, I saw it, you know, you see 1,000 different versions of it. Anyway, last night I was like, had Mark's voice ringing my ear about the 24-hour war, and I just like watched the first hour of it. I just watched it like I never made it. I was just like, man, this is good. Like, I love this story. Look at these Italian guys and Ferrari. And then I was like looking at it and I was like, oh, that's Ken Miles from Ford v Ferrari. That's what he really looked like, you know?
Yeah.
And I was just kind of enjoying it as a spectator. So what a story. I don't think that'll ever. God, you think about those times. Like, think about California right now.
Yeah.
What colossal fucking pussies we've all turned into. And then think about Carroll Shelby and those guys in those days in Venice Beach.
Yeah.
Actually, I was thinking about, I also had it on my mind too, because right about the time, I've never really thought about this, but I interviewed last week on ACS, Robbie Krieger, the guitar player from The Doors. And those guys had like met and were hanging out in Venice Beach probably, well, you know, the band sort of formed in like 1965. So like Shelby was there. Shelby was building Cobras. I guess the Daytona was probably first built in 64. So you have to look up like what month that was in 64. But at the same time, Shelby was like doing his thing in Venice Beach. Jim Morrison and Ray Manzarek were like doing their thing like 200 feet away. They yeah. couldn't have been more different. Now everyone's just a big fucking pussy. That's what we've turned into. But that's what we used to be. We used to be that.
I watched when Ford v Ferrari came out. I watched the Shelby doc and then Ford v Ferrari like back to back. Like watched the doc, then went to the theater and saw Ford v Ferrari, and just kind of wanted to see them sort of back to back and go, oh, this is the story and what these guys did, and here's sort of the romantic version that Hollywood put together. I know we've said this before, both films are fantastic. You can kind of pick the facts out of the doc and compare it to the movie, but the movie's still very good and entertaining in its own right. You know, like it's just a good standalone movie, regardless of some of the facts changing here and there. But you weren't disappointed. I know a lot of people are like, you know, this part I don't get. It's like every time a movie comes out, somebody goes, the book was better. I was like, okay, but I didn't read the book. I just saw the movie, so it was fine. You know, and
I think there's a little pressure on car guys. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
The, you know, the Patrick Dempseys of the world and guys like that to kind of go like, you know, it wasn't that good. Or like basically saying, I know the story. That wasn't the story. You know, part of it is your bona fides. Like, hey man, yeah. I was there, you know, I know how that went down. My feeling is look, first off, you know, I enjoyed Cobra by Stallone a lot. I saw
the
Daylight.
Book was better.
I watched the hell out of Daylight where he was trapped in the Holland Tunnel, you know?
Yeah.
I can't really turn my nose up on movies when I like to watch bad movies. You know, first off, why do it to yourself? You know, like why go, oh, that was no good. Why not enjoy the movie? Number one, or try to enjoy the movie. And number two, it's fine. Just because you know things you don't have to ruin it. But it's true. Like I talked to, when I was interviewing Robbie Krieger, he was like, I was on the set when they made The Doors, you know, with Oliver Stone. And I was like, oh, I love that movie. And he's like, yeah, you know, yeah, it could have done some things differently. And I'm like, yeah, you can't. Robbie Krieger can't enjoy it because Robbie Krieger knows the story of how the song Light My Fire was created.
Yeah.
And the story is Jim Morrison basically said, hey, I can't write all the songs. You guys need to write some songs. And then told like Robbie Krieger when he was like 19 or 20, like go home and write a song and, you know, write it about, you know, something universal or something and love or earth or sky or fire or something. That was Robbie's thought on it. And it was funny. He said this thing that made me think sometimes of my life. He goes, I went home and I wrote Light My Fire. And then, you know, I came back the next day with Light My Fire. And then he goes, nobody else did it. And I thought, oh yeah, I feel like that's my life where someone goes, all right, everyone, we're going to do this. And then I go home and do it. And then I come back and I look around at all my goofball friends and no one did whatever.
No one did the work. No one did the homework.
Whatever we were supposed to do. So we just came back with Light My Fire and that was it. You know, they wrote it. Now, like in the movie, Jim is like discovering it for him and, you know, telling him, you know, and Robbie's like, I have a loose idea for a song. And Jim's like, well, it should go this way instead. Now, obviously, if you just went home and wrote the song and brought it in and it was your band's first number one hit and broke you guys, you wouldn't want it to look like it was a big collab. aberration.
Yeah.
But that's what happens when you make a movie. So anyone who knows too much about that story, like Robbie Krieger, is not going to enjoy that film. I just went to the movie theater when I was 26 and enjoyed the film.
Yeah.
All right. So you want to talk about Sterling Moss?
I thought maybe, we must have seen him or run into him. I don't know if we ever had a chance to interview him for anything, for Going Race or anything, but we've seen him at Goodwood. I just remember like walking around and seeing the little guy blow by and going, hey, that was Sterling Moss.
Right.
And Sterling Moss, as you guys know, unfortunately passed away, but had a nice long life of 90 years old. And I just started looking a little bit more into his career. And then you and I talked a little bit this week, just casually on the phone saying, hey, you know, Sterling Moss is a name that's synonymous with racing for forever. But he had a short career. I mean, he was out when he was 31 years old. So for the next almost 60 years, what do you need to do to stay relevant? You know, like you're constantly involved in the racing world, or you're a likable guy, and you know, people want to do stuff with you and invite you to things and get your input on things. But you know, he started racing very young. I want to say he was like 17 years old when he started racing. And I think he won, Chris can double check, like 16 of his 66 races.
That's right.
And then was in a terrible car accident when he was 31 years old, which resulted in him being in a coma for a month.
Well, I'm looking.
And then it ended his racing career.
He was 31 years old. I got a piece of paper here, and it says he raced from 48 to 62, winning 212 of the 529 races he entered.
Well, the 61 races out of 66 was F1.
So oh, 16 out of 66 was F1.
That was F1, so I don't know if
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very high. 212 out of 530 races is quite a winning percentage. You don't see that. And yeah, that was just F1. 24 podiums, 16 wins, zero championships. But he had that horrible injury. What?
He raced in 107 different types of cars.
Mm. Huh.
So very that's personal. A lot.
See, I have drove 84 different makes of cars over the course of his racing career, but who the hell knows? The point is this. He was a prolific racer, and Goodwood is where he crashed. Goodwood turned out to be a little too dangerous, and that's why they shut it down. I don't know if McLaren died at Goodwood too, or was it like Silverstone or something? Did McLaren die testing at Goodwood? The other weird, you know, it's weird when you see these guys and you realize, I always bring it up to you, like how many of these guys died testing? You know, you just don't think of testing as dangerous as in a race.
Yeah.
But when you look at, when you think of, so McLaren died.
Bruce
testing.
McLaren died age 32 when his Can-Am car crashed on the Levant Straight while he was testing the new McLaren M8D at Goodwood Circuit.
Huh.
Yeah, Goodwood got, I mean, they stopped racing there, I think, in 66. Like, it was too dangerous. Now they have a big race there every year. It's great. But McLaren died testing. God, could that guy imagine how his name would carry on? Ken Miles, of course, died testing. Donahue died testing as well. Donahue, who drove all the Porsche Trans Am cars, or sorry, Can-Am Porsches, the 917 30s. He set the speed record at like Talladega in the Porsche 917-30 and stuff. He died shortly thereafter, I think, testing F1 and Mark Donahue. And then the other weird thing is like if you look at like Ford v Ferrari, and they'll have that thing where like they're at Daytona and here comes Ken Miles and there's Walt Haskins and they're looking at each other and whatever. And then you go, Walt Haskins. Oh, that guy died a few months later when they went to Le Mans. He was testing. Walt Haskins was testing a GT40 at Le Mans and he died testing. It's a lot of died testing. Just yeah. kind of interesting. And if you watch Ford v Ferrari and you see him going down the straightaway and there's that sort of evil Ferrari driver and he's like, they're looking at each other and you know, Ken Miles looking at him and he's looking at him and they're going down the thing. I'll think of that guy as like Benzini or something. That guy died a couple of months later in an F1 crash, like a horrible Jeez. Fire. Like, you just look at these ancillary guys, like they're not making these guys up. That's it's not Roberto. It's like, it's Ganzini or something. I'll think of the guy's name. I got it written down somewhere. But the point is he's the nemesis. He's the Ferrari nemesis, tough guy driver for Ferrari that Ken Miles, who's leading. So the guy's leading, the Le Mans and Ken's got to catch him, but he breaks his car and blah, blah, blah. And then he's dead in this horrible fiery crash. Like just, I think at Monaco, like mm-hmm. a few months later. So it's like all these names who are even around these people are dead half the time. I mean, yeah. I obviously the guy who won that race with Ken Miles, McLaren, he's dead. Like there was just so much. Could you imagine that amount of death in a sport today?
And so much damage. Like Sterling Moss broke both his legs and screwed himself up in 1960. And then 2 years later was his bigger accident at Goodwood, which ended his career and put him in a coma. But it wasn't his first, you know, like significant damage. And the Goodwood event, he was in an F1 car with no seatbelt.
Right. Well, they didn't want to catch on fire. Lorenzo Bandini, that's the guy.
Yeah.
There's film of his F1 crash. I mean, it's just a fiery mess. So it's funny. He wasn't, you know, Sterling Moss wasn't wearing a seatbelt. Lorenzo Bandini's car just caught on fire. Like, yeah. I don't know why they couldn't fucking figure out the fuel situation. Like, nobody mm-hmm. done the nobody could conceive of a bladder.
I guess not. I don't know. It's kind of a weird thing. A good question for Pete Brock, right? Somebody who was there during some of this stuff. But
fire was such a look. The thing about fire is the reason none of those guys wanted to get bolted into a car is because of fire. So because nobody wanted a cage and a six-way harness and a blah, blah, blah because of fire. So if you could have eliminated the fire, you then could have stepped up with your harnesses and your roll bars and your other stuff. You could have stepped up the harness game. But no one wanted to get harnessed in until they figured out the fire situation. And all they had was an aluminum can with tons of gas in it. That obviously is not going to work for a fire. And the only conceivable option would be to put a bladder inside of the tank, inside the aluminum tank. You have Lorenzo Bandini.
Yeah, I love that name, by the way.
It's a great name. He's at Monaco the next year. He's at Le Mans 66. He's at Monaco in 67. He's buzzing around the track. And then all of a sudden, there's a ball of fire, and he's gone.
I don't. It was instant fire. Instant ball of fire.
instant qualifier.
It's almost like it's dangerous on purpose, like to a fault. Like, just, it's amazing how boom, instant fire. It's just all fuel and flames at that point. You're right. There's no, I don't know, like what kind of thin gauge metals happening with, you know, for lightweight on a fuel tank and you know.
I guarantee that that's 1967. I don't know when the first bladder hit, but and that footage is kind of weird. It looks like there's a cut. It's kind of hard to tell, but just looks like he caught a tire on something and just flames.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the thing. I guarantee you that the military had aircraft with tanks that had like self-sealing or whatever tanks or bladders or some form of that by 1967. I mean, by 1967, the military was launching, you know, F-4 Phantoms off of jet. Probably A4s or whatever, probably F4s and A4s off fucking decks in the Gulf of Tonkin. I mean, we should have had a bladder and a fucking tank and a car.
Yeah, at least, well, this is where the weight thing comes in, where at the very least, there was probably different type of blast shields and fire shields and reinforced metal plates and stuff, where a little extra weight probably is worth the level of safety that you're getting, because that, you know, the Bandini crash, that instant ball of flame doesn't look like just a fuel line. Like, you'd never get that much fuel out of a fuel line that quickly.
No.
You know, and that's the tank. That's just boom, it's a ball of fire, you know?
Right. When do you think the first fuel bladder, now it's going to be tough to say was in use, but was mandatory in F1?
Oh, I don't know.
That's an interesting question, right? I mean, they had them in road racing. A lot of my, you know, I got Datsun Roadsters that have a fuel cell, the fuel bladder in them. I mean, they're not, it's not the same bladder because they deteriorate over years, but they probably had a fuel bladder back in the day. I'd be curious as to when those were in use. When did the fuel bladder?
I think a self-sealing fuel tank, original patent was submitted in 1918, and then somehow it was rescinded, and then a self-puncture sealing covering for fuel containers, I believe, got a patent in 1921.
Yeah, that's a little bit of help, but it's not really.
No, but there was. But it just means that the technology was.
Yeah, somebody was thinking about it.
Yeah,
look, I look in the 60s, we had military jets that were capable of going supersonic. What's up with the tanks on the F1 cars? When was the rule that all the cars had to have fuel cells? And when was it for GT cars or NASCAR?
Yeah, or NASCAR or something.
It's hard to find, but I'm seeing for F1, 1970 is when that style of bag tanks were made mandatory to prevent ruptures, fuel spillage, and fire.
Sounds about right. Like, yeah. Obviously in the late 60s, you didn't see it, and you didn't really see all the fires in 75, so it must have been right about 70. But again, not sure why they didn't fucking implement that or get to work on it. I mean, if I went to Sean in the back of my shop and I said, hey, Sean, there's an issue with these lightweight aluminum boxes called fuel tanks blowing up and everyone burning, like, could you work on it? It'd take him about 3 days to figure out that if he put a ballistic type rubber in the lining of the tank that wasn't degraded by the fuel, that would go a pretty fucking long way in preventing this shit.
Yeah.
I don't feel like it was that tall an order.
Right. And to your point, this isn't because one guy got hurt and they're going, oh, maybe we need it, maybe we don't. Like, we're already going on decades of people getting hurt or killed and caught on fire.
It's a ripple effect, because if everyone's greatest nightmare is to burn alive, everyone's greatest fear is to burn alive in a car that's turned over on them, right? Like that's the greatest fear of every driver. Well, then no one's going to wear a seatbelt. They're just going to take their chances outside of the car.
Yeah.
All right. Let me hit bet online. Nothing to bet on, right? Wrong. Bet online has hundreds of ways to wager. They bring Vegas to you, online poker, blackjack. Yeah. Have a little fun during the quarantine. Miss the NFL, live daily Madden NFL, 20 simulations to wager on, plus Big Brother, American Idol, stocks, even Nathan's hot dog eating contest. That's coming up, yeah. Tune into the end of this podcast for Rob's sister Nino's interview with Joey Chestnut, Bet Online, and Bet Online's Dave Mason on the Bet Online Quarantine Quarantine Challenge this weekend. Bet Online, our exclusive partner, Podcast One. Sign up for free account with promo code Podcast One for 100% sign up bonus. Visit betonline.ag. Don't forget promo code Podcast One for your 100% sign up bonus. All right, what else we got?
I was just curious, is the hot dog eating champion, is that guy rich? Like, what are the accolades for eating the most hot dogs? Like, other than free hot dogs?
Well, like, Joey Chestnut, I interviewed years ago on my morning show. He was working, you know, like, I don't know if he was doing construction or like working in a warehouse or something, but he was definitely had a day job. Kobayashi was the big favorite to win. He was winning. The Japanese fella was winning everything. And Joey's like nipping at his heels. At some point, Joey passed him and has been dominating like ever since. And I don't even know if Kobayashi does it anymore. Now, I didn't answer your question.
I mean, does Chestnut still work at Home Depot, or like what's going on?
I don't think, you know, what he does to the best of my knowledge is he does hot dog eating, then he does rib eating, then he does like hot wing eating. And blah, blah, blah. I'm not a fan of the rib and the hot wing because there's a bone involved and it's not technical enough. I like the whole thing to be gone.
Yeah. Well, I get you. Like, you watch the Olympics and somebody was running track or something at the Olympics doing the hurdles. But we don't see as like through the course of the year, they're doing, you know, world championships and whatever. So I guess you got to just keep eating throughout the year.
We have the online celebrity net worth, and we know how wildly that can vary. But yeah, I want to guess what you think it is.
I $2 million.
Yeah, that doesn't seem wildly off to me. That I mean, there's endorsements, I guess. I'm going to go 1.5.
God damn it. It's literally 1.5 to $2 million.
This game's tough. I looked it up earlier in the week.
Well, yeah. I guess Nike is not a part of the hot dog eating competition because it seems a little low for one of their endorsements. Kind of counteracts the whole Be Athletic and Fit kind of thing. You know?
Well, the thing that's funny is Joey used to be what you just call like a big husky dude, but he's now lean and mean that he's winning all these eating competitions. And Kobayashi, who used to win all the competitions, was a freak. Like, that guy had a six pack and was like, I don't know. Kobayashi, as I recall, was like, you know, 5'10", 160 and like shredded. Like, so I know everyone kind of has that like Monty Python version of the big eaters, but it turns out the guys that are in fantastic shape and better athletes tend to be better at it.
Yeah.
That's my experience.
I don't know why we went off on this, but I was just curious because I'm sure you talked to the guys at some point. I'm just wondering what the
way I met Joe Coy, the way I met Joe Coy many years ago is he was Kobayashi. He would play Kobayashi on the radio and he would call in and he would taunt Joey Chestnut. And Joey didn't even really fully know like if that was Kobayashi or like who this guy was, but he'd play these, he'd call in and taunt him. And I didn't even know who Joe Coy was. Like I didn't know all the stand-up comedians. This is, 13 years ago or something, 14 years ago or something. And, Mike August was just like, I got this guy's going to play Kobayashi. Like, I don't even think he told me it was Joe Coy. Cause I was like, who's Joe Coy? Like, I don't know who this person is, but that's who he is. And so he would call in as Kobayashi. And, 2 months ago I opened for him at the Forum. So
he opened for Joey Chestnut.
Yeah. So keep going, everybody.
Yeah.
You never know what the future holds. Yeah. But from the time he was doing that show, I mean, he was doing my show in like, 07, maybe 08. I don't remember. It had been a while since from the time he was unknown doing Kobayashi on my show to the time he was selling out the Forum. But he kept at it, kids. So if you're listening, that's that's the idea, right?
Yeah.
So let's see. Ford Mach-E electric specs. You have something for us?
Yeah, I was looking for some good news in the automotive world, and everything seems to be, between Kyle Larson and Mike LaValle dime. I don't know if you know Mike LaValle. We talked about it earlier this week with Goldberg, and I went into it because he knew him well. Mike LaValle was the airbrush painter on Overhaul, and he did real flames. He did a lot of the airbrush stuff. He died last night Tuesday night.
How old was he?
60, I believe. He had a stroke. He was in the hospital, and a lot of the fans were rallying for him. He's a nice guy. But so I was looking for some good news in the car world, and the Ford Mach-E, which is the electric little crossover SUV type vehicle that will be coming out soon, that I like. I think it looks really good. I went for a ride in one. Mm-hmm. Now the information is coming out and saying, hey, we can revise the numbers. It's going to have a little more horsepower, a little more horsepower and torque than we thought. And, we were kind of breaking it down a little bit about how does this stuff kind of happen. And it's like when you go and you buy, you go buy your Mustang GT, it needs to have the right balance between fuel efficiency and emissions and performance. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you take it and you bring it home, you can do whatever you want and you can put a tune in it and get, 35 extra horsepower, but you might lose another mile per gallon or something in the process. And that's fine. Right. And so Ford has to do a thing, especially with the electric cars. They can say, hey, it goes 0 to 60 in 5.5 seconds. Can it do it in 5.1? Sure. We can just adjust the software. But now what does that do to the overall range of the vehicle?
Right.
So what they figured out is, hey, we can make this thing perform a little bit better, turn up the power and not alter the range. Mm-hmm. And that's where the revised numbers are coming from. So, it's on average, 15, 16 horsepower bumps, 11, 12 foot pounds of torque. But who knows, maybe that translates to another 10th off the 0 to 60 or something like that, depending on whatever mode you're in. But it seems to be like the range will still be at about 230 on the low end for the low battery, I think, or it might be 210 on the low end and 300 on the high end.
The range, yeah.
With the different batteries that they're going to have available. And all-wheel drive versus rear-wheel drive.
My kids are turning 14 in a few months or maybe a month. or maybe, let's see, when are we? Month and a half, whatever.
Chris can Google it.
Chris will Google it. My kids are turning 14 soon.
Yeah.
When they turn 16, 2 years from now, they're not going to buy a gas car, are they?
I don't know that they do, because first of all, the electric cars are becoming more affordable. You're talking about, you know, Tesla, you know, Nissan Leaf, Tesla, you know, Model 3, and these Mustang Mach-Es are going to start at like 44 grand. Sure, they can get up to 60,000 or so, but or more, but you know, they're not $120,000 cars anymore. Like you can get this into a pretty good price range. And yeah, it's like, you know, we like what we like, and you know, it's kind of fun to have, you know, the loud, whatever muscle car or truck or something.
Yeah. But that's for us. I mean, my kids aren't going to, they're not going to want that.
Right. But it is kind of coming to a point where, you know, I go, hey, you know, if we got to go to the studio of a few days a week or go to Orange County to do podcasts or whatever, an electric Mach-E wouldn't be bad to have. You're not going to take away the other things that I like, you know, the other cars, you know, the yeah. loud, whatever. But why not have the cool kind of electric car? One that's now it's fun to drive and it looks good and it's kind of sporty.
Yeah.
And,
no, I think we're there. I think is the Mustang? Sorry, is the Ford E Mustang? Whatever, is that all available? Could I if I went down to Galpin and I talked to Bo Bachman and I said, "Hey, I really want one of those cars, like pronto." How long would it take?
Okay, so it was supposed to be available soon, but with the coronavirus thing, they're delaying the launch. Orders were taken for the first edition, and mm-hmm. I think that's sold out. And mm-hmm. then I think there's going to be another like sort of order process happening. But you can't go to the dealer and get one right now. It's still going to be, I don't know the exact date on it yet. I don't know. It's looking like, 2021. It's going to be a little bit.
Right. So I will, how about this? we're close. Like we're really close now. There's a lot of options. The price is down. Have the Leaf and the Bolt, Bolt.
Yeah, the Volt is gone now. We have a Bolt.
We have a Bolt. Tesla has the 3. A lot of options. A lot of whatever. Like we're there right now, but infrastructure a little bit, range, you know, still can't get, well, I don't know, can we get from here to Vegas? What's Vegas, 200 and something miles?
Yeah, but there's like a fast charger or something on the way, right? At least for the Teslas. But I'm not sure how the
Ford cars. Ford stuff you couldn't get tomorrow, you'd have to wait a year or whatever it is. I'm going to say that, and I'm going to proclaim this, I'm going to proclaim that when my two twins turn 16, 2 years from now, that will be the point where we tipped. That'll be the first time it doesn't make sense not to get an electric car. Now, we all know that, you know, Rob Schneider pulled up in his Tesla Roadster 8 years ago or whatever, and it was like, hey, he's an eccentric celebrity with no kids, you know, fine. And he's a dwarf. So let him drive a Tesla, you know, let him pay $120,000 for whatever.
Yeah.
And then it started getting into the Leaf and stuff, but the range, or the BMW I, whatever, but the range and blah, blah, blah. And then now we're at a point where it's like, my wife drives an electric car. I don't. It makes sense for her. Maybe not so much for me. I say when my kids turn 16, like literally throughout the course of history, you'll mm-hmm. be able to look back to that date, you know, 2022, and go, that's the year it actually made more sense financially, spiritually, whatever. Like it actually, you know, the environmental movement, everything else, it actually made more sense to drive an electric at that point. At this point, it's a little like, that's a little bit of a coin toss, maybe the gas.
But I would also add to that argument in that the cars are going to be cooler by then. So, right, you know, 16-year-old, 17-year-old Sonny and Natalia are going to go, hey, Dad, that thing looks cool. You know, check out this kind of Mustang looking thing, this sporty thing. And it's no longer, you know, making a statement or kind of a hipster thing or even an affluent thing. Like, they're more affordable. They look kind of cool.
Yes.
Bright colors.
Well, that's
fun.
That's all part of the equation, but that's all part of the more sense. We're right there. I'd say when my kids turn 16, we'll go electric. Let me hit Geico. Chris has a question about a Newman 911. Sean's sawing up the tail of the Sebring 911 as we speak. Talk about that maybe another show. Take some pictures of it. Geico, everyone, you want to? Well, you have homeowners insurance, you have renters insurance. Why don't we bundle? We'll get our bundle on at Geico. You just go to geico.com, take either your homeowners or your renters insurance and bundle it with your auto insurance and save a bunch of money and make things a little easier on yourself. That is Geico. Geico.com makes it so much easier to bundle at Geico. That's geico.com. All right, Max Pata, Porsche question.
So it's actually about the tail. So I looked at Sean's Instagram, and he posted this picture of we talked about it 2 weeks ago, of the 911S Porsche, how they had that wing under the tail. So Sean posted a picture of him fabricating it almost the day of you mentioning
yeah.
it. And then later on, I just see this picture, which is everything taken apart, and I was just curious as to what happened.
Oh, not just taken apart. That's all cut up.
Yeah, that's not taken apart. That's cut apart.
Yeah, that's you get one shot. You know, that's what it is.
Yeah, so I guess I'm just asking for an update on what's going on.
Sean's got his wheel out and his pneumatic cutter and his wheel, and he's cutting everything with his wheel. By the way, people, don't use like a Sawzall or a jigsaw, like a reciprocating blade, when you're cutting fiberglass like this or many things. Use a wheel, a very thin wheel. It's so much easier to do it. He's taking the existing fiberglass deck lid with a big tail in it, and he's cutting out a lot of it, and he's shortening it up, and he's making it a lot more narrow. And he's going to put it all back together and have to re-glass it and repaint it, restripe it, and re-everything it. But it was my decision that this car, since it went back to the paint scheme that it had in 1977 when it ran at Sebring with Bill Freeman and Paul Newman driving it, it needed the tail that was correct as well. And the tail was not correct. The tail was off a more modern car, or I shouldn't even say a more modern car, just it wasn't modified as this one was modified. They put these side canards or skirts on it. They shortened it up. It looks really cool. I know it didn't work that well because no one else adopted it, but either way, that was the car as it raced at Sebring in 1977. And I was like, well, then that's what we have to put it back to. And it was definitely bespoke. I have never seen another Porsche with that modification on its tail. And Matt and I have walked through many paddocks and looked at many Porsches, right?
We've never seen this before. I am so curious to how this is going to change anything. Now, you haven't driven the car yet, so there's not going to be sort of an apples to apples comparison, but I'm just so curious as to what they were thinking when they did it. And I mean, we can make some assumptions and what the result was and why it didn't show up again.
And it went to Bullwinkle Racing after this, and it stayed that way for a little while. And then at some point they switched it. All right, so you can, where do you go to follow all this stuff, Max Zapata? Our YouTube page?
Yeah, check out our YouTube page. Just go to carcastshow.com. All the links are there. Find this podcast, the YouTube, everything.
Pick and you can go to Chassis, Chassy, and look at, get the Blu-ray or the poster, or the T-shirt or whatever, uppity and all those movies as well. I think we'll even sign them and send them out to you when this whole thing blows over. You can go to amcarolla.com. I got my new book, I'll Be Your Emotional Support Animal, and that's available for pre-order on Amazon, and you can get the audiobook as well. Matt, what do you got?
Posting some stuff, some old photos and new stuff all of my social media up on Moderator.
So, until next time, Adam Carolla for Matt, the Moderator, DeAndrea, saying keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. And just a reminder to check out our friends at Geico. Whether you own your home or rent your home, either way, it can be a lot of work, but bundling your policies with Geico is super easy. You can bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. And it's a good thing because you have so much to do around the home already. So just go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit Geico.com today. That's Geico.com.
All right. I'm just going to.